There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free. And things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. And we're midway through the week, our brand new week. That's right. Remember, we're now five nights a week. The best in paranormal programming is here on Podcast One. You can find us Monday through Friday as we explore the strange and unusual world around us. If you've missed any of the shows this week, shame on you. But that's okay. We got your back. We've had some excellent shows already. We had Confrontation with Evil, The Possession That Inspired The Exorcist with guest Stephen LaChance back on Monday. Yesterday, Mysterious Disappearances, Dark Legends of Elementals and Fairy Folk with our guest Steph Young. And tonight, joining us, one of our favorite guests, Scientific Support for Reincarnation. We're going to discuss debunking death and reincarnation with our guest, Mark Anthony. Mark is the psychic lawyer, also known as the psychic explorer, and he's a fourth generation psychic medium. He communicates with spirits. He's also a successful attorney, licensed to practice in Florida, Washington, D.C., and before the United States Supreme Court. Mark graduated from Mercer Law School with honors, which included the study of law at Oxford University in England. He also studied mediumship in England at the Arthur Findlay College for the Advancement of Psychic Science. He is the best-selling author of Never Letting Go and Evidence of Eternity, award-winning books, and books I recommend everybody that's interested in the paranormal and what comes next in life and how to deal with those changes. These are the books you want to pick up. Mark appears nationwide on TV and radio show. As a matter of fact, he's going to be joining me this Saturday in hour one of Coast to Coast AM. That's right, I'm hosting not only Beyond the Darkness all week, you can also tune in to Coast AM from midnight till 4 a.m. Central on Friday and midnight till 4 a.m. Central on Saturday. Mark will be with us in the first hour on Saturday as well. Please welcome, though, to his first appearance on our brand new program, Beyond the Darkness, our good friend, psychic lawyer, Mark Anthony. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave. It's really great to be on Beyond the Darkness. I think this is such a great evolution for you and Tim.
Well, thank you. We've been having a lot of fun with the audience, a lot of fun with Podcast One, and it's great to have this new dynamic and new element available to the listeners and bringing out our favorite guests to kind of bring in the new series is what we wanted to do. So I was so thankful you were available, especially to talk about the topic we're gonna tackle tonight. Death is what drives a lot of our interest in research of the paranormal and supernatural. It's been that way since the dawning of time. People want to know what happens next. And the idea of reincarnation, eternal life, is certainly something that's appealing to people like me, Mark. I don't want to believe that that candle gets snuffed out and that's it, end of game. That has been a torturous thought that has plagued me since I was a child. Literally, I remember having memories at 5 or 6 years old, unable to sleep because of the fear of just not being here and it all stopping. And here I am, 49 years old, and I still have those feelings. And even though I've been doing Darkness Radio and now Beyond the Darkness for 11 years, going into our 12th year on the air, I wish I had a better sense of security, but I don't. I'm still unnerved by the concept of death, and it's only gotten worse for me. You know, my mom passed away in November, and having that kind of massive loss in my life really kind of put me down another wormhole of trying to examine what does life and death really mean, and what are the possibilities after this life. Reincarnation is something that's intrigued me, and I've like many of our listeners, have seen specials on sightings and Ripley's Believe It or Not and In Search Of. And there are all of these great cases that have popped up throughout the years that are, on the surface, very compelling. But I know you've been doing a lot of research into this and looking into aspects that maybe even science is now starting to look into and give some credence to for reincarnation. Talk to me a little bit about your indoctrination into the theory and belief of reincarnation.
I grew up in a household where, even though I was raised Catholic and I was supposed to be a Catholic priest, both of my parents had psychic and mediumistic abilities, particularly my mom. And she always believed in reincarnation. So when I was in high school, we'd sit around and talk about life after death. And I never thought of it as a strange thing. And I always felt that reincarnation was not incompatible with the Christian belief system that I grew up in. And, you know, Dave, I like what you were saying on the intro about how the fear of death has always plagued you. And you, of all people, you know, being the host of Beyond the Darkness and on Coast to Coast and involved with the top paranormal experts in the world. But the fact of the matter is you have your doubts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dave, how can you possibly have faith? How can you possibly have a belief system without doubt? And that is part of the journey of faith, because the fact of the matter is, Dave, if being spiritual, if having faith were easy, everybody would be spiritual and everybody would have faith.
Right.
You know, you have to, even Mother Teresa, I mean, Saint Teresa, doubted the existence of God for a period of her life. So think of yourself in good company. You know, if you have doubts, well, then that's just part of the journey. And we all do. And, you know, with your mother passing recently and I loved your mom. For the benefit of the listeners, I had the benefit and the privilege of knowing Terry Schrader. And when I met her, it was in Estes Park at the Stanley Hotel at a paranormal conference. I just immediately loved her, and we just completely clicked. And then we used to correspond on social media. And I know that, Dave, your relationship with your mom wasn't just mother and son. She was your best friend.
Right.
And so, yeah. And so when her
and let me just clarify, not in the Norman Bates kind of way.
in a very healthy sense, because, you know, she was your mom, but she was your friend too.
Right. Right.
And I, you know, I could see the dynamic between the two of you. You would have these incredible discussions and the way she interacted with your kids. She was like the ultimate mom and grandmom. And so when she passed, that pulled the rug of your life right out from under you, shook your very foundations. Now, a lot of us would like to think that there is life after death. And the naysayers and the cynics and, you know, we have to deal with them all the time. I know when we're on Coast to Coast together and Darkness Radio and now Beyond the Darkness, you always get the people calling in there, you know, hurling every type of insult and negativity at us. But we have to look at life after death, not just from a perspective of faith, but now we have the benefit of looking at it from the perspective of science. Let's make it real easy. Dave, you're a science guy. I've seen your lectures. I've seen your talks. You just don't get up there and fling unsupported suppositions at the audience. You say, based on these studies, these are the findings of. When a star burns out, okay? Now, we look in the sky and we are seeing constellations, we are seeing stars that have burned out millions of years ago because let's say a star is 10 million light years away and it burned out 9 million years ago. Well, we're going to continue seeing the light from that star for another million years because it took, you know, that long to get here. Well, the star isn't the energy. Energy is neither created nor destroyed, only transferred. So think of the star as your body, but the light that it emanates as your spirit, as your soul, as your consciousness, the energy of who and what you are. And that continues on. And that's a law of physics.
All right. Now, you know, you brought up an interesting fact that does the idea of reincarnation jibe with theology, with Christianity, with those belief systems. And I want to get into the science aspect, but I'm also interested in, you know, reincarnation seems to be something that could be universally accepted and have nothing to do with religion whatsoever. Because Correct. Even if you remove God from the equation, there is a constant cyclical nature of energy and being. And when one death occurs, a birth is happening. You don't need to believe in a God. You don't need to believe in a heaven. You don't need to believe that there's an afterlife or ghosts. But the idea that your energy may go from one physical meat shell into another, that seems like an easier concept to grasp, at least for me, that even if you have your doubts where it comes to the God and the afterlife, the idea that this energy can be transferred from one vessel to another should be a very viable belief and thought, because we are an energy, we are a magnetic pattern that could, again, inhabit another physical form.
Absolutely. And you brought up a good point about religion versus science. Up until the late 20th century, now here in the early 21st century, if you were in one of two camps, either in the religion camp, the camp of faith, which just accepted life after death because it's in the Bible or it's what your belief system says, or you're in the scientific camp that unless we can put it under a microscope or subject it to some type of empirical test, it doesn't exist. Right. And what we're now seeing in the last, let's say, 4 to 5 decades is bridging the gap between the spiritual and the scientific. And I love what you said, that you don't have to believe in God or an afterlife. You basically describe Buddhism. You know, Buddhism is, well, maybe God exists, but if not, that is fine. Maybe there is an afterlife, but if not, that is fine. I call it Buddhism, and I love Buddhism, and I call it the whatever religion, because whatever happens is okay. And it's like, because you never hear a Buddhist terrorist, do you? and what it is, it's a religion based on cause and effect, your actions and your belief system. But mainstream Buddhism embraces reincarnation, as does Hinduism, and we all know that. But the Dalai Lama recently said Hinduism and Buddhism are not – I mean reincarnation is not just for Hindus and Buddhists anymore, that it's at the core of all of the great belief systems. So that sparked me to start doing research. And you know, Dave, I found that this is true. Reincarnation is at the root of Judaism, Christianity, and there are even references to it in Islam. In fact, in the Chassidic sect of Judaism, which is one of the ancient mystical sects, there's a belief that we go through a succession of lifetimes. In fact, in the book of Job, chapter 1, verse 21, there is a passage, "Naked I left my mother's womb, and naked I shall return there." A lot of biblical scholars and a lot of reincarnation experts believe that that is an Old Testament, or rather in the Jewish tradition from the Torah, a reference to reincarnation. Mm-hmm. Then in the early Christian era, one of the great Christian thinkers was one of the church fathers. His name was Origen, and he lived in the city of Alexandria, Egypt. And Origen was unique and profound. He lived about 200 years after the death of Jesus, and he rejected the notion of eternal damnation. And he taught that through a series of lifetimes, all of us, including Satan, would be reunited with God. So in the early Christian era, there were several different philosophies, and reincarnation was a big one of them. Without going through a long history lecture, by the 6th century, the Emperor Justinian the Great, the last of the great Roman emperors, convened the 5th Ecumenical Council, and that's when reincarnation was banned and deemed heresy. And the reasons for that, the Romans, once they got hold of Christianity, they really liked it because they said the Emperor of Rome is God's representative on earth and will rule until Jesus returns. And so if you disobeyed the emperor, you were, according to Roman law, disobeying God's representative on earth, and therefore you would burn in eternal hellfire and damnation. So this is where reincarnation gets filtered out of Christianity, and then it gets replaced by this stairway to heaven or highway to hell. However, one of my favorite passages in the Bible is Matthew 17, 12 and 13. And long story short, it's right after the Transfiguration. And I know, Dave, we've talked about this in some of our esoteric and spiritual Christian discussions. Mm-hmm. But when Jesus takes his disciples to the top of this mountain, and it's called the Transfiguration, and it begins to glow white, and then the spirits of Moses and Elijah appear on either side of him. Now, in your work as a paranormal investigator, you've come across this term ectoplasm more than probably 100 times,
right.
I would guess. So when you study the Transfiguration, and it appears that Jesus was engaging in an ectoplasmic projection, which Christianity refers to as the Transfiguration. Here's the good part. For some reason, this passage did not get edited out in the Fifth Ecumenical Council, probably because it's such a great example of the power, the metaphysical ability, the spiritual gifts that Jesus possessed. And when he comes off the mountain, the disciples have a discussion with him. And the discussion is, well, who am I? And they, well, some say that you are John the Baptist. Others say that you are Elijah returned. And Jesus said Elijah has returned, but they did not recognize him, for he appeared as John the Baptist.
Hmm.
Elijah lived 800 years before Jesus and his cousin John the Baptist. And so a lot of Hindu, Buddhist scholars, progressive Christian scholars, and reincarnation experts believe that this is Jesus discussing reincarnation, which also may be one of the reasons that he kind of upset the religious hierarchy of the day and made enemies that led to ultimately his crucifixion. But the fact of the matter is, reincarnation has existed since ancient Hinduism, and also exists in Christianity, but because of a Roman political agenda, it got filtered out. So that's one of the many reasons I don't believe that reincarnation contradicts being a Christian, because God is the most loving parent of all, and no parent, and Dave, you're a parent, okay? Would you ever, and I know your kids do stuff, but, and every now and then it was like, but could you ever condemn one of your children to an eternal hell of suffering? No, but you may send them back to learn a lesson,
right?
and that would be reincarnation. So if you want to look at it in that sense, we go through a succession of lifetimes until there is no longer a need to physically manifest once again in the material world that we call Earth.
You know what this almost sounds like, and again, I don't want to browbeat people with religious talk too much, because I know that turns people off, but what we're getting to is an interesting aspect of belief systems and the idea of reincarnation, and we're going to get deeper into reincarnation. But isn't it fascinating, Mark, that could this be hell and heaven on earth? Could it be that until the end times, we cycle through over and over and over and over on this planet to live every aspect, to live every nuance, every belief system, every challenge, everything, so that our time here is spent evolving. Not necessarily, you know, I don't know that I buy into the contractual agreement that you agree to come back and be an abused housewife or a sexually molested child. To me, that's a concept I have a really hard time grasping. But you're just reborn into the shell and whatever life that life leads into. Sometimes you may have multiple lives where that just happens. The conscious choice that that's what will happen to you is, I think, where a lot of people lose the whole idea of reincarnation, and that we make these quote-unquote soul contracts. But if Earth is purgatory, maybe that's a better way to call it, we continue to live out these lifetimes until the final, if there is one, final judgment. Maybe that's what occurs. And, you know, there are a few religions who believe that there is a limited allotment of souls. And in quite a few of them, it's around like 100 to 144,000 only will eventually yes. make it to heaven. And I was curious what your thoughts were as a medium and a psychic. And hear me out. I mean, I may have to pass the duchy on the left-hand side here to get everybody involved in this part of the story with me. But what if there are only 144 souls that exist, period? And those 144 souls continually, or 144,000 souls, fracture with each lifetime and begin anew. And there are factions of those souls that continue to live over and over. And that's why some people may have multiple memories of believing that they're Marilyn Monroe or believing that they're John F. Kennedy. It's because that one soul fractured and there's that common thread of the life web that touches each one of those fractures of the soul. So many of them believe that they were Kennedy because in a sense they all were, and that they keep moving forward in evolution. And when it all comes down to it, when it's all said and done, at the end of it, all of those pieces are brought back together and create one cohesive soul, and that breaks it back down to 144,000.
That's an interesting thought. And Dave, you know, I've been involved with the paranormal long enough to where I just don't dismiss something because maybe I don't believe it. It's entirely possible that there are, you know, 144,000 souls that have multidimensional aspects, which would lead to, you know, various incarnations. I'm not in that school because I've also had people say, well, if there is reincarnation, then how is that possible? Because there are more people alive on planet Earth today than have existed in the entire history of Earth. And in fact, when I was in, I was giving a talk in Beverly Hills, and there's this, you know, really snooty person there that said, "Oh, how could that be?" I mean, they gave me the whole, you know, "I'm an atheist and I don't believe because there's more people alive today and all this." And I said, "Well, that's assuming that Earth is a closed system and a closed unit." And the problem with the 144,000 soul school of thought, and the problem with the there's more people alive today than ever have existed, that's assuming Earth is like a hermetically sealed unit and that no energy is coming into and exiting Earth, because energy is neither transferred or, I mean, neither created nor destroyed, only transferred. And that there is a constant stream of energy and soul energy between this planet to another dimension, so on and so forth. And that would also be putting a creative limitation on the power of God. Well, according to our space program, there are thousands of planets orbiting stars. So there's only 144,000 souls in not just the universe, but the multiverses. And that's why I don't necessarily subscribe to that school of thought. And if you do, that's fine. But the fact of the matter is, because of science and technology, we now know that there are millions of stars in our own solar system that have planets around them. So let's say that there's 10 million planets capable of sustaining life out of a billion stars. So that could indicate that there are 10 million planets just in our solar system, just in the Milky galaxy, just in the Milky Way alone, that have these soul energies that when they're done with one world, when that star burns out and that planet dies, that they transfer to other planets. So certainly that's a theory at this point, but the fact of the matter is energy is neither created nor destroyed, only transferred from one form to another.
I get that, right, and the idea that this expansive universe would only have one planet that has real life like us, not just amoebic little creatures, but that we would be the only planet that would sustain this kind of life. I'm with you on that, and right. Then there should be this large pool of souls, which may explain why some people feel totally lost on this planet and completely, excuse the term, alienated. it may be because this is their first incarnation to our world.
It could be. It could be. I mean, and when this planet, and we know that our sun's going to burn out, or unless we, you know, destroy ourselves in this world, all this energy is going to go somewhere else. And then maybe in the next life, we'll all, you know, be sentient beings, but look like gelatinous cubes. I just hope I'm the hottest gelatinous cube on that world, you know?
You will be the Brad Pitt of gelatinous cubes, Mark Anthony. You've earned it in this lifetime. Do you find though when we look at the concept of reincarnation, the idea that we've lived before, we will live again, and you know maybe we should cover that when we look back at this. You know, what is the true definition of reincarnation? Before we get too deeply involved in that, though, I do want to make a mention. If you like what you're hearing with Mark Anthony, you want to get copies of his books, Never Letting Go and Evidence of Eternity, you'd like to order them, do me a favor. Did you know that every time you use Amazon, you could be helping to keep Beyond the Darkness podcast going? That's right. I mean, Amazon is the biggest global shopping place on the world, and we've got a great little deal with them. Whenever you shop through Amazon.com and purchase them, a piece of that sale can go directly to Beyond the Darkness podcast. And what you do, you go to podcast1.com, click on Killer Deals. You'll see the link, Killer Deals. Then click on my show logo, the little ghost holding the microphone. Click on that. You'll see Amazon and you'll see my other sponsors. Make sure you visit all the sponsors because, again, without them, we don't exist. But click on the Amazon banner there. Then when you click the link, bookmark it. That way it's very easy to access the next time you want to go order. And it's just a cool way that you can keep us doing this podcast every week, five nights a week for you. So please go check that out. Killer links at podcast1.com. It costs you nothing to do it. It's free, and it's a great way to help us sustain and keep the show moving forward. And pick up a copy of Mark's books, Never Letting Go and Evidence of Eternity. Or you can pick up any of the books, documentaries, and movies you hear us talk about right here on Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness.
And if you're liking what you're hearing on this show, remember there's more of me this week than you deserve. That's right, I'm that kind of giving guy. You can find me on Coast to Coast AM this Friday and Saturday night from midnight till 4 a.m. Both nights, midnight till 4 a.m. Central Time. If you want to find radio stations and XM Sirius station that covers us, then all you have to do is go visit coasttocoastam.com. It's the best in overnight talk radio, and I've got some great topics we're going to be covering this weekend. And if you want to hear all the episodes I've done with them over the last 4 years, you can become a Coast Insider. Just go sign up and become a Coast Insider. 15 cents a day gives you access to 5 years of past archives and even more. And you'll be able to hear all the shows I've hosted on Coast to Coast AM. Again, Mark Anthony, my guest, will be with me for the first hour this Saturday, and we're going to be talking about a completely different topic. So make sure you tune in and check that out. Right now, we're discussing reincarnation. And Mark, I want to get back into that. Reincarnation. Give me a definition. What does the term and the concept really encapsulate?
Reincarnation is the belief, Dave, that a living being starts a new life in a different physical body after each biological death. In fact, it's actually derived from a Latin term, which means entering the flesh again. So what this indicates from a spiritual standpoint is that when the body dies, the soul, which we also refer to as the spirit, leaves the body and then is capable of coming into, not capable, but does come into another body. And in science, you can refer to the soul as consciousness, or as the quantum electromagnetic field in the brain, which remains coherent after the death of the host organ, which is the brain, and then that quantum electrical field can reattach to a new host, which is a fetus.
Sounds like a bunch of supernatural baloney to me. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, there's actually a lot of scientists coming out and saying this now. In fact, what I just described is known as biocentrism. And one of the top influential scientists in the world, Dr. Robert Lanza, he's a stem cell researcher and declared by Time magazine as one of the 100 most influential people in the world. And what's fascinating about Dr. Lanza is he kind of brings up the notion that Descartes and Voltaire and a lot of the great Enlightenment philosophers said that I think, therefore I am, as opposed to the early 20th century existentialists who said I am, therefore I think. In other words, the only reason I think is because I'm existing right now, and when my body dies, I cease to exist. And so Lanza is saying, no, the earlier philosophies were correct. And he indicates that the body receives consciousness the same way a cable box receives satellite signals. And what Dr. Lanza explains in his theory of biocentrism is that death of consciousness only exists as a thought. And the reason for that, Dave, is because people tend to identify themselves with a body. You think that, okay, this body is me, this face is me, this voice, this countenance is me. And what Dr. Lanza is saying is, no, the body is merely a vessel. What did you call it, a meat shell earlier?
Right.
I like that. A meat shell, okay? And so what happens is when we die, it's like your cable box crashes. Well, that doesn't mean that the source of the transmissions has ceased to exist. It just means that cable box doesn't work. So then, according to biocentrism, the energy of your consciousness gets recycled back into a different body at some point. Now, here's the fun part, and this is where you and I come in with well, where is it before it gets to this body? And what Dr. Lanza is saying, and he's actually coinciding with the string theorists, that the body exists in a different dimension outside of the physical body, and possibly, not just in a different dimension, but possibly in another universe. And see, this fits into what Dr. Michio Kaku and the other string theorists, that there's not just a universe, but there are multiverses. There isn't just one dimension. There are several dimensions. Now, for the naysayers, is there just one radio station on FM? Of course not. There are a multitude of frequencies. And then, Dave, when we look at the electromagnetic spectrum, there isn't just FM radio bands, but there's also AM, XM, then there's gamma rays, microwaves, X-rays, ultraviolet rays. There is a huge plethora. There's an incredible amount of energy and frequencies within the electromagnetic spectrum. And so what Dr. Lanza is saying with biocentrism is that when you die, that quantum field that's in your brain, that energy, it goes to a different dimension, a different frequency, and then at some point it reattaches to a fetus and begins a new life.
Okay, now that's a fascinating theory on it, but you're a medium, you're a psychic, and you deal with the realm of the dead on a regular basis, and you do
yes.
evidential mediumship, which means that you get specific details. You're not just giving innocuous, oh, your father's proud of you, your mom baked cookies with you. It's not that generic stuff. You get into the specifics of communication to tap into those bits of information that prove that you are making a connection of some sort.
Yes.
So couldn't it be then, in the sense of, and I know we were going to talk about James Leiniger, one of my favorite stories and systems
yes.
for reincarnation. There's a book called Soul Survivor, S-O-U-L, Soul Survivor. And it's James Leiniger. His story is amazing. This little boy was having memories of his plane being shot down, knew too much information, way too much information, and specific detailed information for a child, and was eventually able to not only prove to his father, who was a huge skeptic, but to many others, including the original family he was attached to, that he is, in fact, the reincarnation of a World War II fighter pilot. And he was so specific that when a map was unfurled, he was able to point to the place on the map where his plane had been shot down near Japan. And the Japanese government, if I remember this correctly, Mark, didn't they bring him out and bring him over that shot down plane?
Yes, yes. And what it is, when he was about 2 years old, little James Leiniger started saying that he was a pilot of a Corsair.
Right.
And he kept referring to his ship as the Natoma. And, yeah, he saw a map of Iwo Jima, and he pointed to Chichijima and said, that's where I was shot down. And they mean the Japanese government, located the wreckage of a Corsair at the bottom of the ocean right where he said it was. And then he kept talking about his plane, the Natoma. Well, his parents, who, as you stated, were skeptics.
Right.
They started doing research, and they found out that there was indeed a USS Natoma Bay, which was an aircraft carrier, which launched Corsairs, which were the fighter craft, that they were using in naval aviation warfare.
Right. And what's funny with that, if I remember too, the father thought he was able to finally derail his son's story, because when he did the research, the ship did not carry the Corsairs. And he quoted it to his son, and he said, they did the year I was there, and he gave the year. And when the father did further research, sure as hell, it said right then that this year, 44 or 45 or whatever it was, the Corsairs began taking off from that airship. So that was really an interesting aspect to this. But I wonder, as you talk about it and as we discuss the idea of souls and energy and this magnetic field, couldn't quote-unquote reincarnation be nothing more than little James Leiniger is the cable box? And he has his own soul. He has his own life. But he's tuned that cable box into this other soul that maybe resonates at the same vibrational level that he does. So that
you know,
he's getting that information and thinking it's his memory, but what he's done is he's just immersed himself, washed himself in another lifetime.
That's pretty impressive. All right, let's assume for...
Yeah, I'm not saying that's any discussion. Less amazing, but I'm just saying, couldn't that be a possibility?
Of course it's a possibility. But what that also indicates is that he's still in communication with discarnate intelligence, and that would indicate also that James Leiniger is a medium of sorts. But based on the study that I've done of him, there's no indication that he communicates with spirits. He zeroed in on this one particular lifetime. So your theory could be true. The reincarnation theory, though, I mean, it's amazing the things that he brought up that were verified. He had these three G.I. Joe dolls that he named Leon, William, and Leon, Billy, and Walter. Okay, Leon, Billy, and Walter. Well, when his dad started doing research, he found out that three of the pilots that served with James Houston Jr., who James Leiniger said he was, were named Leon, Walter, and Billy. Now, why would a two-year-old name his three G.I. Joe dolls the same names? And he kept talking about his friend Jack Larson. Well, they couldn't find any record of Jack Larson having died. They checked the VA. They checked all over. They found Jack Larson was alive. And they brought little James Leiniger, who was about 6 years old at this time, to a reunion of the crew members of the USS Natoma Bay. And this kid starts saying, oh, you're Jack Larson. You dated this girl and you're so-and-so. And the shipmates were like, this kid knows stuff that how could he possibly know? So it's really, really fascinating that this boy remembered things on such a detailed level. Or, like you're suggesting, Dave, maybe tuned into a spirit, which would indicate he was some form of channeler. But if that was the case, why just one spirit? Because as a medium, I can tell you, we just don't stop at one spirit. I've probably conducted readings for close to 15,000 people mm-hmm. in my lifetime, which in each reading, let's say five or six people come through. So let's do the math there. All right, we're already 100,000 spirits. There's not just one spirit I talk to. And then, of course, there's he always possessed. Well, there's no indication that he is possessed. And I've seen recent interviews of him. He's about 20 years old now, maybe a little bit older. And he doesn't have the nightmares of crashing in the ocean and burning anymore. He seems like a very well-adjusted young man, and he just says very matter-of-factly, reincarnation is real, and I was this guy.
Right, and what's interesting to me, though, is his memories and dreams stopped once he was over the shot-down plane, and he made this kind of closure with that soul. So, again, in the idea in the realm that he's working as a channel, he is now sharing the same space with what was once the physical form and the spiritual form. Couldn't that be part of what breaks that bond eventually? And, you know, when we had him on our show, they said that he no longer had this feeling of connection to that life anymore. So as a channel that understands what they're doing and communicates, why just one? Why only one spirit coming through? Maybe that's all he literally was attuned to. Because, you know, as a medium and a psychic, if you go into a room, you're going to encounter all of the energy of the people that are in that room. You right. need to refine and focus that energy to get to my mom and not get Larry's pet, you know, cocker spaniel. You've got to focus. Well, a child maybe doesn't have that ability, or at least not that innate ability, but because he resonates at exactly this megahertz, that just so happens to be the exact same megahertz or within a very close proximity of who his original host soul may have been. And I know that sounds far-fetched and fantastical, but again, it just seems to me like that's what you do as a medium, is you connect with memories and thoughts and images that in most cases, and I've seen you do it, and I've seen people like Michael and Marty Perry and Chris Fleming, that a lot of times when they'll make these connections, they almost become one with that spirit. They'll take on some of the mannerisms of that spirit.
Right, yes.
So to me, that seems like what yep. the concept of reincarnation is that you are, your energy is incarnating again into this physical form. So when my grandfather comes to visit you, Mark, for a reading, and you start playing with the knuckle on your left hand, and as you're talking to me, you start taking on his mannerisms. Aren't you, in effect, a reincarnation of my grandfather at that moment? Because you're taking on his essence. You're taking on what once was him, and it's becoming part of you.
No. What's happening? No, that's a good question, Dave. And that's why I always love being interviewed by you, because, you know, a lot of people are like, so what's it like growing up? You give me good questions like that. No, we're not becoming part of that person. What's happening is the spirit, their quantum field, okay, their soul, which is an energetic quantum field, their electromagnetic field is then interfacing with mine. So the spirit's overlaying his or her energy on me and is transmitting information, which I will see things, hear things, feel things, and we can temporarily pick up on some mannerisms. I was doing a reading for this one lady one time, and I started doing this thing with my upper lip like Elvis doing that ha-ha-ha-ha type thing. Right. And she, the look on her face, she goes, oh, my God. I'm looking at her and go, what? She goes, my son did that. And I had no idea what I was doing. But what it was, he was transmitting that particular impulse to me, making me do it, as and this was a visual cue for her.
Because you were in tune with that spirit.
I was in tune with him,
right.
But I was not becoming him or his incarnation. Now, the cool thing is when I do phone readings, which is the vast majority of the readings that I do, and people go, well, how can you do phone readings? Well, because the spirit's pure energy. They're zipping back and forth between me and the recipient at light speed. Just the way we are having this conversation now. You're in Minnesota, I'm in Florida, and this is getting broadcast all over the world. And people don't think of that as miraculous technology because they see it every day. And during the course of the reading, I said, Red Rover, send Robert right over. That just blurred out my mouth. And I hear a pause on the phone, and the woman said, oh, my God. I texted that to my friend Robert the other day. And what it was, her father's spirit was letting her know that he was around and aware of what's happening. So I love when people, oh, you're cold reading. It's like, really? How do you cold read that over a phone? You know?
Well, but couldn't it be, and again, just calling this into question, and I don't want to make it a putting psychics and mediums on trial, but there's a thing called psychometry.
Yes.
Where even myself, who's not a trained psychic or medium, I can hold a piece of jewelry or something contextual to a person, and sometimes I will get images. You're picking up on that. You're a more refined, detail-oriented medium, and couldn't you be picking up on the psychometry of the energy of Dave Schrader, who just texted, Red Rover, let you know Beavis come over, and you're picking up on that because it's part of my field, of who I am, part of my memories, part of my Akashic records. So couldn't it be more likely that you're tuning into that aspect of it, which is not any less impressive? That's still an amazing quality. But couldn't it be that that is much more of what's going on than we're actually talking to a discarnate soul?
I could give credence to that if it were in person, because psychometry requires a physical contact with the object or the person in order to tune into that energy and then discern things from past, present, or future. Mm-hmm. In other words, a medium tunes into the energy of a discarnate intelligence, third party. A psychic tunes into the energy of a person, place, or thing. And psychometry, matter retains vibration and energy. There's nothing, surprising about that because science tells us that. And when you start doing a development and opening yourself up to the sensitivity awareness level, what happens is the person's electrical field, meaning mine, tunes into the energy which is vibrating from the inanimate object or the person, and then you are able to discern pieces of information. That's like medical intuitives. They do a scan on somebody, and they find disruption in energetic flows throughout the body, which will coincide with medical anomalies and other illnesses. But when you're doing this over the phone there's no physical contact and the things that are coming through are extremely detailed that there's no way I could possibly know or Google. I was doing a reading for a lady and I saw an image of an octopus and I go, octopus? And then I hear her on the phone go, oh, my God, which is always good for mediums to hear.
Right.
And I go, okay, what's with the octopus? She said, well, my husband and I lived in Belize. We lived on a canal over the water. We'd catch lobsters and stick them in this tank overlooking the water. One morning we came out with our cups of coffee, and an octopus had climbed up out of the canal and was grabbing our lobsters. Do you think that's what he's talking about? And I said, well, unless you have another octopus story, I'm kind of thinking, yes.
Who doesn't have multiple octopus stories for just such an occasion, Mark? and I get that. And again, it's just coming from the concept of being outside of this realm and not having the abilities, or at least not having worked on those abilities like you have, that makes us part of it. So that kind of begs the question then, too. If reincarnation exists, how is Mark Anthony connecting with the spirit of my grandfather who passed away 28 years ago? My grandfather has most likely reincarnated at this point, or my great-grandfather that you tapped into. if that's the case, how are you reaching their spirit when they're already taking other calls in a different form?
Yeah, that's one of the questions that I go into in great detail in my book, Evidence of Eternity, because there's a section on reincarnation there. Because when I was on the Never Letting Go speaking tour, people kept asking me that particular question. And it's going back to Dr. Lanza's cable box theory. And Professor Hans-Peter Dohr of the Max Planck Institute for Physics in Munich, Germany, compared our brain to a computer hard drive. He said when the hard drive crashes, the information on the hard drive gets uploaded to the cloud. In that way, I'm immortal. Okay. Well, what I've found, and this is supported by what's known as the Schwarzschild quantum lattice theory, and that is where scientists have studied electrons, and an electron will disappear from one location and reappear in another location without going through the matter in between. And it appears that the electron is transferring to a different frequency, a different dimension, and then reappearing. So this is part of the theory that we're multidimensional beings. And one of the scientists said, if you ever have one of those days where you can't quite focus, you don't feel all there, don't worry about it, because you're never all there, because part of your electrons are always popping from this dimension to another dimension. So that when we physically die, that quantum energy field in our brain then transfers to another dimension. Now it reincarnates. However, we are multidimensional beings, and in the spiritual realm, or rather schools of thought, they call this our higher self, that we're actually, our consciousness is in our brain, but it's energetically connected through quantum, the reality of quantum physics, to a greater whole. So look at it this way. Your higher self is a librarian who has read The Diary of Anne Frank, The Godfather, War and Peace, and let's say that you want to talk to Anne Frank, but she's now reincarnated as Michael Corleone. The fact of the matter is the characters in these books don't know each other, but the librarian knows all of them, so you're communicating with the higher self that retains the residual memories and personalities, therefore giving you the ability to communicate with somebody who has reincarnated.
Science and the idea of reincarnation. I'm intrigued by the fact that science has, and I think this lends itself well to believe in reincarnation as well, science has taken a hard-edged look at things like out-of-body experiences by doing testing and putting images up in the ceiling or on the roof. And people have come back and told them about these images. So science has taken a look at that. That means that soul or consciousness or essence, whatever you want to call that aspect of us, does transcend the physical form, which gives us hope that there is something beyond, you know, overweight, bald, bearded Dave, right? There's something that I can incarnate and come back as Brad Pitt in a gelatinous form. You know, there's that possibility and option for me. So, if science is looking at the fact that the soul can leave the body and travel, the soul out of body can witness things that are going on in this, and not just from a conscious level where maybe you're unconscious, but your subconscious is still hearing and processing everything. Instead, this, you are hovering above, getting a bird's eye view of what's going on, down to details of watches or tools that were used. That, to me, lends a much bigger credence to the fact that the soul survives outside the physical form. So then the next logical step would be that reincarnation should exist, because if the soul can leave the meat form, then that means it can continue on and perhaps inhabit another. Do you believe in the topic of walk-ins, where a soul that is discarnate can then take over the soul of an empty meat bag now? You know, we saw it in the movie Heaven Can Wait with Warren Beatty. I think there was Waiting for Mr. Jordan was an earlier incarnation of that movie, where somebody died too early, and they took his soul and put it into the body of somebody else whose time it was to go, but he got to kind of carry on in that form.
I really liked All of Me with Steve Martin yes. and Lily Tomlin. you know, if you haven't seen that one, that is hilarious.
It is.
You know, Dave, I keep an open mind on walk-ins. I tend not to believe in that because I look at it as one soul per customer. However, there are a number of people. There's different types of mediums. People like me, I'm a mental medium, which means that I receive the transmissions in my mind's eye, mind's ear. Then there are, we talked earlier about ectoplasmic projections. Those are what are known as physical mediums. And then in Britain, we call them trance mediums. In the U.S., call them channelers, like Edgar Cayce, where spirits will overlay their energy and temporarily take use of the body without actually possessing it. And I think that there's a lot of people who are trance mediums or channelers who don't know that they are, and so they pick up on these other spirits, and that could also lend itself to cases of possession and of the like, and where the concept of walk-ins has come from. So that's the school of thought that I'm in when it comes to walk-ins.
Well, you mentioned possession, but you believe that the human form is a one soul only. Can we be possessed by other spirits, or is it simply, do you think that's more of the darker realm that creates possession?
I depart with a lot of my colleagues. I don't buy into the darker realm. I know that there's a lot of non-human spiritual intelligence on the other side that aren't necessarily evil, but they don't necessarily care about human beings. They're more aligned with other things. But I think that channelers can have those spirits overlay their energy and perhaps use their body without becoming and supplanting that soul. So that's what I meant by one soul per customer. You know, and certainly if you find things like that happening, or you find that you're a channeler, you need to find people that can help you learn how to use this, turn it on and turn it off. I mean, a lot of the inexperienced mediums, younger mediums will run up, I see spirits all the time, like, you know, they're happy about it. And of course, they're excited, and I understand that. But, you know, you don't want to leave the doors and windows of your house open 24/7 because anyone, anything's coming in at any time. You want to be in control of the spirit contact so that you can tell the spirit realm, I'm doing this or I'm not doing this. Therefore, you control the contact. You also, this enhances the quality of the contact. And the fact of the matter is, Dave, spirits love to communicate with us. You'll never get a decent night's sleep. You got to tell them, hey, guys, give me a break. You know, like Lord Rosanna Danny, you say, hey, spirit, you're making me sick.
Right. All right. The idea that there's a scientific protocol to the idea of reincarnation. You mentioned one researcher that has this theory and can tie it to quantum physics. Are there other scientists that are taking a more intensive look at the idea and theory of reincarnation?
Yes, I think that I mentioned Hans-Peter Dorff from the Max Planck Institute, Dr. Robert Lanza. You've got Fritz Albert Popp, who talks about the quantum field in the body, being able to stay coherent and leave the body. There's Neil Harris Bush, big believer in reincarnation. The scientist, Dr. Ian Stevenson, he's the one, he was actually a psychiatrist at UVA, University of Virginia, and he's the one that started studying reincarnation in earnest. He was kind of like what Raymond Moody did for near-death experiences. Ian Stevenson took the scientific method and applied it to reincarnation. And here's what's fascinating about Dr. Stevenson's work is that he focused mainly on children. He did over 3,000 cases with children who could not only remember a prior life like James Lineker, but the prior lifetime was not so long ago, so that the child who remembered that lifetime could actually meet family members and friends of the prior incarnation, like James Lineker did by meeting Jack Larson and other members of the Natoma Bay crew. And he found that there were a number of similarities, that they all start talking about this when they're toddlers. And it appears that traumatic deaths in particular really, really leave a stain. Like if somebody had drowned in a prior life, the child in this life would be terrified of the water. So it seems like a lot of the traumas carried over. And so he took a very, very scientific approach. And what he did, Dave, is he didn't get involved in religious discussion because he felt that let's not bring that into it. Let's simply right. observe. And the one thing, though, that fascinates me and kind of gives me a little bit of dismay with Dr. Stevenson is he found no evidence of karma. And that's where I kind of disagree with him, because I still go with the for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. And also he's dealing with toddlers who aren't always able to explain everything in as great a detail. Also he's dealing with one lifetime of that particular incarnation, not several. So there's you know, fascinating. Body of work with Dr. Ian Stevenson, and unfortunately he passed back in 2007, but the work that he started certainly opened up the scientific community, and now the physicists are coming out and saying that, as Dr. Michio Kaku said, that eternal life does not contradict or violate the laws of physics. So we're getting some pretty respected people in the scientific world, and certainly quantum physics. You know what's fun about that, Dave, is I was studying this, and one day I was ready to pull my hair out. I go, because it's so heady, and I ran across a quote from the great physicist Heisenberg. And for anyone that watched Breaking Bad, that's what Walter White, that was his secret name, was Heisenberg. Well, Heisenberg was this great physicist, and Heisenberg said, when you think you understand quantum physics, you don't. So that made me feel a lot better.
You talked about karma, the idea of karma. Now, again, this is kind of a hippy-dippy, tree-hugging theory and belief. And we hear people talk about karma and this. But for the layperson and a lot of us just existing in life, the idea that there is this justice, this spiritual yin to our yang, you know, it's really hard to swallow because I watch some horrific people do horrible things and they continue to live. Then you've got a person like my mother who was a nurse and gave her life to aiding and helping others, and her life is ended early due to cancer. Where is karma in those moments, Mark? Where do we see karma if it truly exists?
That is certainly the philosophical question of the millennia. In an esoteric sense, it may not be for us to be able to observe because we're looking at let's take your mom as an example. Just her physical life here. We're not looking at what may happen to her on the other side and in subsequent lifetimes. And the more I study spirituality, the more, as Nikolai Tesla said, what one man calls God, another calls the laws of physics. And I certainly believe with Tesla. And so we're judging karma on the basis of what we can see and what we can know. I mean, I was in the criminal justice field, both as a prosecutor and a criminal defense lawyer, and I saw some absolutely despicable, evil, sociopathic monsters seem like they just skate through and nothing terrible ever happened to them.
Well, I'm not talking about the judges. What about the criminals?
Yeah, but the criminals, really. I know, the judges. Are there any judges listening? Oh, okay, good. Then we don't have to repeat ourselves. Right. I'm probably going to hear from somebody on that one.
You and me both.
But energy, you know, is neither created nor destroyed, only transferred from one form to another. And that's part of the basis for reincarnation. But another law of physics is for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And what's cool about that, Dave, is that religion and science tend to have overlapping concepts. Because when you look in the book of Galatians, you know, the passage, God shall not be mocked, whatever a man shall sow, he shall reap. And then, of course, the Hindus and the Buddhists, whatever you do will come back on you. So the religions have been saying this. Quantum physics has been saying this. And the hard physics has been saying this. So it may not be our ability in finite form to see the big picture and see what the what they're going to get reincarnated as. So, you know, somebody that is a horrible monster may come back in a terrible form in some subsequent lifetime. Perhaps the oppressor will come back as the oppressed. And so that's one of the things that I talk about in my discussions, and one that I try very hard to do, and sometimes I'm not very successful at it. What all the religions teach: be nice. Just be nice. Really, treat people the way you want to be treated. Golden rule. The Buddhists say, don't do to people what you don't want done to you. So it's all there in the religions, and it's all there in the physics. So that's why I'm thinking that the two, that science and faith do not have to be in opposing camps. And that's what I like about the era that we live in. We're beginning to see the overlap. What's happening is we're losing from religion the fairy tales, the fear, and the mythological nonsense, which has been used to oppress people. And on the other side, from the science, the negativism, the if you can't see it, taste or feel it, it doesn't exist, and the cynicism, you're finding scientists becoming more spiritually minded and people of faith now finding validation based on objective and empirical evidence.
What other cases have really caught your attention in the field of reincarnation? James Leiniger is a standout. I mean, that's an amazing case. And again, pick up the book Soul Survivor, S-O-U-L, Soul Survivor, if you want to go deeper into that book, because that's a remarkable tale. But have there been other cases that really interested you and enough to think, yeah, this seems like the real deal?
Yes. In fact, in my book, Evidence of Eternity, I chronicle two of them that, with all due respect to James Leiniger, kind of do rings around him. Okay.
Wow.
The most heavily researched and documented case of reincarnation in modern times was Shanti Devi. And Shanti Devi lived in the 1930s in India. And about age four, she didn't talk. And then all of a sudden she started talking, and her parents were like, she won't stop talking. She kept saying, yeah, she lived in this city called Mathura, and she said, this isn't my home. I want to go home, and I live near Delhi, and my husband's name is this. And she started giving this incredibly detailed information. Well, her parents were Hindus. So unlike, you know, people that would say, oh, this is the work of the devil, Hindus believe in reincarnation. So just out of curiosity, her father started making some inquiries, and the Indian government got involved. And in fact, Mahatma Gandhi actually headed up the investigation. So what they did is she was about 6 years old, and they put her on a train. And this was like about a 60, 70-mile trip from her town to where she said she lived. And she got off, and nobody led her anywhere. They followed her. And she walked down the street, and she came up to this house and said, it used to be painted this color. And she goes, that's where I lived. And there was a man standing in the doorway, and he said, am I your husband? Well, what they had done is they hired an actor to say that he lived there and he was her husband. So she didn't know this. Of course, she's 6 years old. And she's looking around the crowd, and she points at this man standing in the crowd and goes, no, he's my husband. Well, that was the guy that really did live there. And then she started explaining that during sexual relations, it was painful because I had this problem with my hip. And the guy's like, oh, my God. And your sister had an affair. And our grandfather did this. And she started giving this incredible exact detail of her prior life. And it was all chronicled by a Swedish journalist for a couple years. And after intensive study, and I'm just giving you the tip of the iceberg, it was determined that this was a verifiable case of reincarnation. And Shanti Devi lived into her 80s. She remembered her prior life, her entire time, and she became quite the symbol and figure in India. But the details that she gave were immense. And what's so good about this case, Dave, is this was in 1930s India. It's not like the six-year-old girl could pop on the internet and start looking people up. And 60 miles in 1930s India was a very long way. So she recognized people. She recognized the young man who she said was her son. She explained about him, illnesses people had, affairs they had, familial relationships to such an immense degree of accuracy. So the case of Shanti Devi is certainly stands first and foremost in the study of reincarnation in the modern era.
We talk on, and we've talked about it in the past on Darkness Radio and other shows. What about people that have multiple personality disorders? Some of these people that have been deemed crazy for years, could they not be just dealing with multiple lifetimes, multiple incarnations of their psyche that are so strong that they're influencing or chiming in all at once?
That's entirely possible. That's certainly the spiritual explanation, is that the example that I gave earlier about the librarian knowing all the different characters in the books, but in this particular person, for some reason, the characters are all overlapping each other. It reminds me, though, when I was a young attorney and I was a prosecutor, I was representing the state of Florida at a Baker Act hearing. And there was a guy who claimed he was both King Solomon and the Antichrist. And so we're in this room at the mental facility, and they bring him in, and he looked like a crazy guy, like the wiry hair. But, you know, most people that have been involuntarily hospitalized because of mental illness usually aren't looking their best. And the doctor was from India, and he goes, "Oh, yes, he has this manifestation." And, you know, he's going through and explaining all this. And the judge says, well, who's King Solomon? You know, the judge figured he'd ask him some questions. And the guy said, "King Solomon was from the Bible, a very wise man." And the judge goes, "So who's the Antichrist?" And all of a sudden this voice came out of him. Like, and I remember I'm sitting like 2 feet away from him, and I'm only like 25 years old. And I'm like, "Oh my God," you know? And I mean, the shift, Dave, he went right from this King Solomon. You could see like the look in his eyes. He became this very like evil looking type. And of course the judge ruled that he could potentially be a danger to himself and others. So they returned him, to the facility. But I think in that particular case, that was purely mental illness. I mean, I've seen other people, though, that seem to have what you're referring to with the multiple personality disorder. So let's suffice it to say the jury is still out on that one.
How about these cases? And I know you don't have much time left, but how about the – and I don't mean that in a spiritual way, Mark. I just mean on the show. But how about these people that have come forward and they have physical manifestations, markings, scar tissue, things that should not be there because they have not dealt with this in this lifetime, but yet there's a hole where a bullet wound was. There's a mark across the abdomen where, a knife wound occurred on this other person. How is it, I'll buy the spiritual aspect of one energy entering another, how is it that it's also manifesting as a physical manifestation?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That's part of Dr. Ian Stevenson's research in reincarnation, is that, let's say somebody said in a prior life they had their, they got shot in the stomach, and then this little child is born with a scar that corresponds where the child says, "I was shot in a prior life." We're not exactly, when I say we, it's meaning people that study reincarnation, we're not exactly sure why these physical traumas oftentimes seem to transfer from one life to the very next life. Now, obviously, if you say that I was burned at the stake because I was Joan of Arc, and that's why I'm afraid of fire. Okay, well, there's no way to determine that. But when you can say, when a child says, oh, I was Harry the gangster 20 years ago, and I was shot in the head, and this kid has a scar right where the bullet wound entered the head, and you can compare them, and the child provides details about Harry the gangster and the cause of death, then it starts getting a little bit harder to refute. But why do they carry the physical injuries? At this point, that is still one of the unanswered questions in the study of reincarnation.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate chatting with you about this stuff, Mark. It fascinates me. It brings me a little bit of peace about death, and I hope it does for our listeners as well, because evidence of eternity is what we're all seeking, right? The idea that the sum of what we are far exceeds the physical form that we currently inhabit. Those of us that don't necessarily have the ability to tap into that aspect and find those past lives, do you think if it's something like at my age, 49, I haven't had flashes or memories, is it something I should leave alone, or is it something I should explore more? Should I go for a past life reading? Should I go for a regression? Or do you think that can cause perhaps more trauma in the long run by opening those portals and those doors again?
I think you should do it. Why not? Because the fact of the matter is, all you're doing is coming to terms with different aspects of yourself. And perhaps through a past life regression, let's say, and I'm not saying you specifically, but let's say that somebody has a fear of the dark, or perhaps they have a ache or a pain for which there is no medical explanation for in this life, and they find in a prior life they had their arm chopped off or something. And from what I understand, people who will confront those type of injuries and medical conditions from a prior life will cease to suffer from them in this life, much the way when James Leiniger found the location of where he said the plane that in a prior life went down, he no longer had the nightmares of drowning in a burning plane. So perhaps the greatest adventure of all is the one within.
I'm sold, man. I want answers. I want to continue believing that there's more to this, and that I do get to continue on, and that wherever I continue on, I might be reconnected with the people that I've lost in the past and brought back together with them. We've got about 10 minutes left together here. Do you believe that you have encountered your past lives? And how do you, as a medium, differentiate it between being your past life and memories that just exist out there that you may be tapped into?
I'm always very, very skeptical when I myself have a spiritual or a past life experience, because I want to be careful about jumping to conclusions. And that's, being an attorney, it's all about evidence, and being an evidential medium, it's all about evidence. But Dave, I have had residual memories that don't have any correlation to my experience in this world. Or rather in this life. I believe that everyone has lived many lifetimes, and that we will continue to live many lifetimes, and that it's nothing to be afraid of. It's energy. Energy is neither created nor destroyed, only transferred. It's a journey that we go on, and it's an eternal journey. It would be nice to think that we're going to end up in some Michelangelo-esque version of heaven, sitting on clouds, drinking really good, you know, French wine and listening to harp music. But from what I have seen from the other side, that's not what happens. they say it's better than that. So I got to tell everyone, it's better than that. And I also want to say, though, for people who are depressed and feeling badly about themselves, do not intentionally cut yourself, your life short to experience the other side, because I do believe in karma, and karma never loses an address. And the fact of the matter is, we are here to live in the material world and experience and encounter the difficulties, the problems, the proverbial slings and arrows that come our way for a reason. What that reason is may not always be immediately apparent to us, but every day that we're alive is a privilege and a gift, even though many days do not feel that way.
And, you know, fear can be an amazing motivational tool. And my fear of death far outweighs my own dealings with depression and anxiety, Mark. To say that I haven't thought of suicide would be a lie. You know, I've been open about that. I attempted suicide in high school. And thankfully, that wall of fear of death has continued to grow in me. And maybe that's what keeps me alive so that I'm here for my children. But one of the most fascinating aspects I heard is that we do this life review after life isn't always what we think. We're not just getting to sit and watch a grand movie unfold before our eyes. In a lot of cases, we live the lives of those people that we've affected, in a sense that our death, much like if you can imagine It's a Wonderful Life, has reverberations, and the decisions and choices we make in life have those same reverberations. And by ending our life, taking ourselves out of the line, we will now know and feel the tragedy and pain of everyone that knows us and loves us and how their lives will be impacted by that loss. So I've tried to use that as fuel for my fire as well, that I don't want to let other people down, but B, I certainly don't want to have to deal with that karma when I die of feeling the pain that I gave to everyone else for making a permanent decision for a temporary issue.
Absolutely, Dave. The pain and the grief and the loss that you're experiencing in anyone who's lost a loved one, that caving in sensation, the feelings of hopelessness and despair, what compassionate thinking person would intentionally inflict that upon another? You know, and the fact of the matter is we don't need a hell with a guy with a pitchfork, because Dave, you're in hell right now.
Going through the grieving process.
But one thing that great thinkers like Origen of Alexandria have taught us, and that Buddha has taught us, and great spiritual leaders like Jesus has taught us, and Gandhi, is that we can all emerge from that pit of hell, and we do, and we will. So every day is an adventure. Every day is a gift. The problem with adventures is sometimes it isn't just a roller coaster ride. Sometimes you get flung off the cliff. reincarnation is part of our journey. And we tend to think of living in the material world as the be-all, end-all. That is just part of it. So the fact of the matter is, make the most of it while you're here. And be nice.
And if you are on that verge, or on that cusp, and you feel darkness overwhelming you, and you feel that the only choice for you is to end this life, there are people that can help. There's hotlines, there are phone numbers, there are people whose job it is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to be there and counsel you. It's hard. We want to reach out to our friends and loved ones, and sometimes we get the worst advice from them because they don't know what to say. They don't know how to help you from that moment. And although they believe they're being inspiring, sometimes it can be demotivating. So call somebody whose job it is to know the right things to say, to know how to help you, and maybe give you a different perspective and a new outlook. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 1-800-273-8255. 1-800-273-8255. Your life matters. It matters to me. It matters to Mark. Even though we may not have met you, it matters. And you don't know what your life is capable of. And in these dark moments, remember that a permanent solution to a temporary issue is not the way to go. You can fix this and you can get better. I've survived it. I've survived very dark times in my life. And I found through helping others has been a great way to get me out of my own head. So I stopped the darkness and the depression inside me by doing something for other people. That's just one method that's worked for me. There's ways to get help, and people like the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline might have the answers to save you, because you don't know what great things life has in store for you and the lives you may help just by being here. I'll get off my soapbox, but call the number 1-800-273-8255 if you're feeling like you want to hurt yourself or someone else. And I want to thank our guest. Please go pick up his books. I promise you, you will walk away feeling more educated, more entertained, and more enlightened than you've ever been. Never Letting Go, and Evidence of Eternity, from psychic lawyer Mark Anthony. You can find more information about our guest by visiting his website at evidenceofeternity.com. That's evidenceofeternity.com. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. You've been listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. We'll be back tomorrow night when our guest Neil Story joins us. The Book of the Dead, Bizarre Rituals and Hauntings. That's next on Beyond the Darkness.